The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, so welcome along to the GAA Hour, brought to you by AIB. We have a show today. There's only two games at the weekend, lads. It's not exactly a stellar lineup, but look, they're two good enough games that we're going to do a show, and there's plenty to talk about. Anyways, because, by the way, it's good to be back. I'm a father now, and I'm a daddy. I feel absolutely no different, just a little bit more tired.
It's great to have you back. My nose is a bit out of joint being in my seat again.
I thought you, listen, you did too good a job. I couldn't get comfortable at home. I took 2 days off and went, look, I think I need to come back in here now.
This speaking is to your boss there, he wasn't expecting you back in, so maybe you didn't make the paternity leave at all, you know.
That was it. I got 2 days. Itzy's parents are over from Spain, so there was like four of us in the house tripping up over each other. So I just thought I'd just make myself scarce and maybe take some time off later on.
What you will learn, the more kids you have, the more you want to be away out of the house. I'm working anyway.
I'm going to play intermediate football with Portlaoise this year. It would be nice to get out of the house on a Tuesday.
You'll probably also be managing that team as well.
Yeah, this is it. Now I'm really going to re-immerse myself in the GAA world. That's the way it works. Let's do a huge freak result last weekend with Offaly and Armagh. Like, I mean,
Armagh,
it was
won. Jesus.
Armagh, like, it was 6-22
two in a row.
6-22 to 10 points, right? And there's been an inquest kind of in Offaly since, and it's almost like I just can't understand it. I don't even want to quote the delegate talking last night saying it looks to me like the players aren't playing for Pat Flanagan. He's brought no players in the previous 2 years and is at war with the clubs half the time. I don't know if his position is tenable. Now, this is Pat Flanagan, who got awfully promoted from Division 4 and won Division 4 and a national title in Croke Park. This is Pat Flanagan that got them to third in Division 3 last year. So they got promoted and almost got promoted the second time again. This is Pat Flanagan who beat Longford in the Championship last year. He only lost to Westmead by a point, who Westmead got to the Leinster final, then beat London and then lost to Kildare. Pat Flanagan is not under pressure for his job. Who do Offaly think they are that, you know, my point is these freak results can happen. Like, if Armagh played Offaly another 10 times, we wouldn't see that.
To be fair to Pat Flanagan and the Offaly team, they have been competitive in the first three games of the National League. They haven't won all. They won one game, but they have been competitive in the other games.
They hammered Antrim. Antrim a good beat.
Exactly, yeah. But, what you know, having been at the match in the Athletic Grounds last weekend, I actually believe that regardless of who the opponent was, Armagh would have put in that type of performance on display and beat anyone comfortably, given the way they played. You know, sometimes when you have an on day, you know, everything seems to go right for you. Yeah. And Sunday was definitely one of those days for Armagh. But that result has been coming, believe it or not. When you look at the three previous games, they have been winning comfortably in all three, but haven't had the killer instinct to really drive the nail in the coffin. And on Sunday, you know, what was remarkable was that they just had that ruthless streak throughout the 70 minutes of the game, and it was amazing to watch. But it was the speed and how fast they moved the ball that didn't allow Offaly an opportunity to get a tackle on. And when Offaly had the ball, it was their hunger and desire to win the ball back, and that was very impressive from an Armagh point of view.
Yeah, don't be making this all about Armagh. Like this top of the show is about Offaly here, Stevie.
No, but I'm not. But
I'm
actually trying to stand up for Offaly in a sense that regardless of the opponent against Armagh on Sunday, they would have gone out with the attitude and mentality, the way they played, and beat any team in that division quite comfortably.
I was going to say, like, I've been in Offaly's sort of shoes plenty of times where a team gets six goals, Armagh got. Like, when you start shipping a few goals, you just check out and you're away from home, the game's over, you know it is, and like the last 20 minutes are just a foregone conclusion. Like, so then the scoreboard looks completely different to what standard you're actually at.
Yeah, I don't think you should probably read into the standard. I remember, was it 2001, Meath destroyed Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final. Like a freak result. That just happened. That would never happen again. Now, Armagh are better than Offaly, but they're not 30 points better than Offaly, you know? And these results, if Meath played Kerry, because that was a great Kerry team, the team Meath beat the following year.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, this wasn't any stupid Kerry team, and Meath destroyed them by whatever, 20 points. Freak results happen. And you need to see more of a progression, or, you know, more evidence of bad results than just a one-off like that. I wouldn't read too much into that, because actually, in my experience, it was crazy. Under 21 level, we played Galway in a challenge match. This was an unbelievable Galway team. This was the same year, 1998. They had Michael Donnellan, they had John Dively, they had Joyce, they had Savage, they had Meehan. They had a sensational team. They beat us by about 30 points at home. And we were taking this challenge match seriously. And then we played them in the Ireland semi-final and we beat them. You know what I mean? And like, it's just, that was a freak result and we were better than that. And like, just give Pat Flanagan a break.
Absolutely.
Here.
There's no doubt that Sunday's result was freakish. And like, generally you could actually put in a Division 1 team against a Division 4 team, and 9 times out of 10 you're not going to get a 30 point difference between both sides. So, you know, there's not that much of a gap between Armagh and Offaly. I would say Armagh are a better team. Armagh's forward line though are very good, and I spoke about this before on the show.
You did, you called that the week before.
Provided they get the service, and they got a lot of service last Sunday, they will cause hassle and they will cause harm to any defence, and they were ruthless. You know, after 10 minutes the body language of the Offaly players, you could see it was totally deflated, and proper order as well, because Armagh had scored 1-7, 1-8, 1-9 after 10 minutes, and you know the game was done and dusted at that stage.
Yeah, it's hard to keep the head up when no matter who you are, when you know you're pretty much gone. And sometimes performances can be so flat, they're unexplainable. You're looking around at your teammates, it's like you're all drugged, and it's like, what is happening here? And it's, I don't know, it's some results are just a little bit crazy like that. But their fullback Shane O'Sullivan, he plays with Road as well. He tweeted on Monday morning, and he tweeted a very thoughtful tweet about, in general, talking about it's not a level playing field. Teams have different populations, amounts of clubs, funding, amenities and previous success. The teams with the best setup will prosper. Having a professional setup in which players train like athletes, recover like athletes and are athletes breeds success. The game has evolved significantly in a short period, and because the majority of counties don't have the resources, funding or forward thinking, not only are they lagging behind, but they're being embarrassed. It's not the players' fault. I can't reiterate that enough. But unless there's some way of capping the funding or implementing something so that is somewhat even across the board, we're in danger of seriously losing some teams from competing. This is the stark reality, and it's really sad to think that might happen. There's an awful lot of sense there being spoken by Shane. Like, I mean, he's probably fighting the wrong fight at this time of the year, because it was a Division 3 match against a team of similar quality, you know. It wasn't like they were just being beaten by Dublin, you could make out that argument, or a Tyrone, you know, someone who is a Division 1 team with brilliant, huge resources, or Mayo. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of sense being said there. Like, I mean, how can these teams with very, very little behind them compete with other teams that have...
What I would love to see is the Offaly reaction, you know, in their next game. Are they going to be hurt in such a bad way that they're going to go out and put in a performance, not only for their county and the jersey, but for Pat Flanagan as well, you know? And that's generally how you can gauge where a team's level are at, and it'll be interesting to see how they perform in the next outing.
What's Shane getting at there? Is he suggesting that Armagh are backed so much more than Offaly? I mean, we had Sean Kavanagh on Monday. You weren't there, Willie. It was amazing. Best show of the year.
A little bit long, the interview with Sean Kavanagh, but I'll let you off.
It was unbelievable, Stevie. You should have heard it.
But Sean's this week's best player ever, yeah.
But, like, you know, when he was talking about Dublin, of course, and, you know, how it makes you a little bit jealous. Now, he was saying, you know, it doesn't impact him playing on the pitch, but you sort of got the feeling that it probably does, because all these things add up, especially when you're chasing Dublin. But that's Dublin. Like, I mean, how much more are Armagh getting than Offaly, and how much in a better position than they're? You can understand why Dublin are getting so much money. They're in the capital, they've got the population, they play at Crewe Park every week, so it makes sense for advertisers to come to them. But why would you go to Armagh ahead of Offaly? Like, you know, is there that big a gap? Like, so I don't really get what he's...
Yeah, I think when he talks about the league, it's a bit of a... It's not the right argument, like I said, because there should be similar standards. And to be fair, if Offaly played Armagh like 10 times, they might lose 8 of them, but they wouldn't be hammered in the 8 of them, you know that?
And would Shane have the same opinion now if he tweeted that today, you know, a few days on, you know, because we spoke at the start of the show, it was a freakish result. Those type of results don't happen genuinely in Gaelic football.
Yeah, no, it is definitely a weird one. But Les, is this funding thing overplayed a little bit? Because we talk about Dublin a lot, about the funding, but like, I know the culture and the setup is important. But like, I mean, look at Tyrone, for example. Look at how close they are to the top table with one third of the spend of, say, Mayo and Dublin. I think sometimes it can be a bit of a cop out, an excuse. Oh, we don't have this, we don't have that, we don't have a sports psychologist who really, what tangible kind of improvements are they going to give us? You know, I think it can be, players can hide behind stuff like that.
Well, you can turn it around and look at the club scene at the minute, and there is no doubt that, you know, Dublin clubs have a monopoly at the minute, but, you know, funding and the funds available to those clubs did make a difference when it came to playing All-Ireland semi-finals. You know, they were beat by teams who had a better team bond, team spirit, and, you know, Slotnil and Dr. Crooks are the two teams in the All-Ireland final, and, you know, that ultimately didn't come down to finances available to either club.
And, like, I mean, there is no team, I don't care if you don't have 10 euros to give your team, there's no team should be beaten by 30 points if they have spirit, if they have work rate, and if they have a togetherness. Like, I mean, you get that, and don't be worried about funding for now. You know, I do think, and I do use it as an argument for Dublin to a certain point, but I also think it can be made more than what it actually is.
Yeah, it probably makes their lives so much easier, just like, and having the food when they need it, you know, having everything looked after for them, and it makes them happier. Like, and especially then if you are in that chasing pack, and if you're like Tyrone, you got beat in the quarter final last year by a point, maybe these things then start to become, like as you said before, in camps things become magnified and blown out of proportion a little bit, but when you're chasing, that's the way it gets.
Yeah, it's the psychology of it, you know, because it's always like you have the work done, you're confident. You know, we have a great setup, I've no excuses. Do you know what I mean? If you don't have that great setup, in your head you'll go, we don't have what they have. And it's all in your head. It's all a psychological thing.
But, you know, think back to your own playing career. Every single manager that you played under, what's one of the things that he highlights at the start of the year? There's nothing you aren't going to get this year. You know, absolutely nothing you're not going to get.
That's a promise. No stone unturned this year.
That's a promise made by every single GAA manager. You know, so I'm sure Pat Flanagan said the same to the Offaly camp. I'm sure other managers have said the same, Ciarán Maginn in the Armagh camp. But is it being carried out, and are the players getting exactly what they believed they were going to be getting? You know, and the promises that they're made. And, you know, I do believe that ultimately a player's job is to go out and perform. You know, forget about anything else out of their control and out of their hands. You know, the finances, the funding, what they're going to be getting as endorsements, whatever. A player's job is simply to go out and perform, put in performances on the training field, and carry that into the matches.
But yeah, I do think most inter-county teams, like you talk about resources and stuff, I'll say all have the basics. They'll have a trainer, they'll have a strength and conditioning coach, they'll have a stats team, they'll have their manager, they'll have their selectors. Like, that's your bread and butter. Yeah. Like, outside of that, then it's kind of bells and whistles. And like, not saying it's not important, and it does maybe help psychologically, right, we're well set up. But like, I mean, these extensive backroom teams, I don't know.
They all have their different ideas, and I actually seen something from the Offaly warm-up on Sunday that I've never seen before in any Gaelic football team. They actually warmed up with beach balls.
What?
Beach balls. It was like a weight.
I hate that.
It was like a weighted beach ball. But people,
I saw Longford doing that a while,
you know,
back.
And I was saying to myself, geez, if Offaly were to go and make an impression in this year's championship campaign, you would see every team out with beach balls next year.
Like beach balls or medicine balls?
They were beach balls, but they were weighted beach balls.
Right.
So they were.
Like a yoga ball?
Bigger. Like power balls?
About the size of a yoga ball, yeah. But they were using them in the warm-up at the start, throwing them to each other and just controlling them, whatever.
I hate
warm-ups.
I'm changing my mind an awfully here now. I've gone from defending them. You know, what a load of nonsense.
Warm-ups are a chance for managers to sort of show off to the crowd. Look, this is how much control I have under this team.
I'm sure their physical trainer or strength and conditioning or skills coach had a perfectly good reason for using them, but I'm unsure of what that was, you know. For me, you know, you train with a football, you prepare with a football, and that's it. You don't
my
use
God,
it.
I actually can't get my head around that. Bloody big yoga balls. Like, that's, you're right, Conan. That's ego trip stuff. And it's on the same lines as another thing that I really hate, and Geezer does this, is this huddle in the field even after being beaten. Why can't that be done in the dressing room? And the manager's in the middle and he's pointing at everyone and he's turning around in a circle and he's getting everyone and he's showing how inspirational he is. And it's like, go away. Do that in the privacy of your own dressing room.
If you've ever managed a team, I don't know if you have yet or not, but I have. And
I'm well sought after.
It will,
I can tell you now. You'll be managing your intermediate team this year, player manager. But I can assure you, your players actually are distracted once they hit the dressing room after a game.
Right,
win, lose, or draw. So that's the best opportunity to get them together and put the point across.
That's a very good point there. That's shut me right up, because there's just a bit of experience from a manager. Yeah.
I remember one of our old under 21 teams, under 21s, they get together in Derry for the last few weeks after the season's over. They play a bit of football, but they got beat in the first round. And this is an under 21, not like they just threw the team together at the end of the year, got hammered, and then they were in this huddle for about 15 minutes afterwards. But that was the season over, like, and they're just there talking nonsense, God forbid now one of the managers are listening. But I remember we were all looking on going, what are they talking about? Just go home, see you in January.
There's nothing worse than being kept on the field for 20, 25, half an hour, after a match, and your span for listening to the manager, it's gone after a few minutes. So keep it short and keep it sharp.
That's
and
the same
and
before games as well. Yeah. That's where I think a lot of managers fall down, when you've got four backroom team members and they all want to have their little say. Rather than just giving them 3 points and getting out there, they all want to just talk and talk.
Yeah, Justin McNulty used to do something after a game. I don't know, was it an Armagh thing, but it really, really pissed me off because I wasn't on the starting 15 when he started with Laois, and it was during the Auburn Cup before I'd dropped off it. But if you hadn't played a part in the game, you had to train after the game. And I know there's a great logic to it, as some subs that don't play any part, they actually lose fitness because they're not getting anything. But seriously, you're after sitting there, you're pissed off already that you haven't gotten a run. And the team is all in great form after winning, and you, like a loser, is heading out with seven other fellas to do shuttle runs out to the 45. I was like, Justin, I said, this is completely unfair.
It is something that we have done quite a bit, but it's not only Armagh. I see plenty of GAA teams doing it, but I also see plenty of Premier League teams.
Could they not do it the next morning, maybe? Emotions are high after
the
game.
But if you actually watch the analysts after a Champions League match, for example, when they're at pitch side, and if you look in the background, you'll see players running up and down the pitch, and they're doing their training session because they weren't involved in match day squad. So,
It's horrible. It's cruel. Yeah. It's just cruel.
I remember a club level one time after we won a game, the manager wasn't happy that we didn't play as well as we could have. So everybody who played had to hang around. We just did sprints full length of the pitch, and again, it was almost like, look, everyone, this is how unhappy I am with this team, even though we've just won by 9 points. I expect
that's
more.
An ego thing, yeah.
I'm sure that you have tweaked the hamstring plenty of times at that stage, and used it as your wee excuse to go in and get a rub.
I didn't really have to do that. I just dropped off the panel. I was just gone. I said, I'm not staying around for this kind of shit.
Not at Roscommon, though. Ken McStay having his interview, and just pelting down with hailstones, and you just saw a few guys in the background after they lost as well. Just felt so sorry for these guys in the background getting sort of pillaged up and down the pitch.
That's a great way of changing the conversation, Conan. You're getting good at this presenting, because that conversation needed to end, and now we're on to Kevin McStay. No, I'm glad you brought him up, because that interview on Sunday night, it was like, geez, I was watching it going, Kevin, you don't have to explain yourself to this gobshite that how Roscommon you are. You're a proud man. You've got your own pride at stake here. Even if you were from the moon, you don't want to fail as a manager. So you've got that. That's your starting point. So to think just because he's not from Roscommon, and this is, I know he explained he's living in Roscommon for so long. Yeah. He didn't have to do that. Yeah. He was responding.
Over 20 years and he managed the minor team 20
but
years
even
ago.
If he wasn't, Stevie, you're in with Down, right, in about a Down club. Are you telling me that Kilcoo are going to look and say, oh, Stevie's not from Down. Yeah. You're going
Let's
to
wait
try. You're
going listen, wrong.
At the end of the day, regardless of where you go to manage or coach, your job is to get the best out of the bunch of players and group of players that you have available to you, and ultimately, it boils down to results. And results have gone against Roscommon lately, so there's pressure mounting on Kevin McStay's head. And I think it is unfair at the minute, because you have to give him a chance. This is an All-Ireland club winning manager. This is a guy who got off to an unbelievable start last year with Roscommon in the National League. And, he was being tipped for success at such an early stage in his Roscommon career. So give the man a chance. Yes, results haven't gone for him, but, give him an opportunity to find form with the team, and that's one of the things that I really dislike about Gaelic games. You know, we're becoming more and more like soccer in terms of the demands and expectations set on managers. Give them an opportunity to go and get results and to find their best team, and a time. You know, definitely give them a couple of years before you judge them.
Yeah, and that's, of course, it's like the soccer example. When the minute the manager is taking all the flack, the players go, okay, yeah, I'm on easy streets here. He's out the door if this goes pear-shaped. Yeah. So, like, I mean, it's a double, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy then that the manager's almost a dead. Mm. He's completely gone.
Well, the hilarious thing about Gay Sheeran's, it was him that said that.
I wasn't even going to mention his name because I don't think he deserves it. It was so idiotic. Yeah. But anyways. Yeah.
Well, I'll not go into too much, but I went then and looked him up a little bit, and then saw a picture of him, 2014, standing alongside Kerry man, John Evans, in the Roscommon dugout. Like, you know, and I know he was having a go at him being from Mayo, but it was just like, what? You know, as Kevin McStay said, what do you want me to do? Like, I can't.
Well, Kevin McStay is certainly more Roscommon than John Evans is, you know.
Yeah. But it just goes to show what I thought watching it was the pressure Kevin McStay must be under. That he'd feel he had to prove how Roscommon he is, you know, because like people know that, you know, and talked about his children. I was reading in the local papers his children having to read that and be embarrassed. They don't have to be embarrassed. The only person that has to be embarrassed is that Egypt going on, you know, talking like that, because, like, I mean, and then Kevin's trying to prove it, and my heart kind of went out to him. Like, I've interviewed Kevin a few times, and like, he's incredibly honest in interviews. Yeah. So that was just him being himself. And like, Kerry got a late goal. It was just after a really good home performance against arguably the second best team in the country. And like, if you want to start talking about that, and like, Kevin did say that, you don't play and be within a point of Kerry coming down the home straight if things are gone pear shaped.
Well, this is the other thing though. Like, the teams that Roscommon have played so far this year, Mayo, Kerry, Donegal, Tyrone, four of the five best teams in the country in the last 5 years. Like, they're in Division One. The reality is they're playing teams that are better than them. Like, you know, so I don't actually know what else he can do either. Like, yes, they can maybe get a result here and there. I know they came flying out of the blocks last year, but everyone was criticising them last year then because they came out too early, and then they completely blew up come championship.
Exactly, yeah, and I suppose maybe he just doesn't have the, you know, maybe the money in the bank now to be able to ease himself. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's tailoring it because he made that mistake last year. And
that's what it could be. It could be a case that, you know, their training sessions are tailored towards getting Roscommon to peak in championship time, and if that's the case, you know, people on the outside don't know exactly what's going on. So, you know, have your opinions and keep them to yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, judge the man given on championship performances at least.
Yeah. There's more to this though, lads, because there are a lot of fellas after leaving the squad, you know, and there was the bus stop with the joint management with Fergie O'Donnell, and three of the management team left at the end of the year. And, you know, to help us find out exactly what's going on in Roscommon, we have Shane Curran, who's on the line now. Shane, what the hell is going on here?
Well, I think what we're doing is we're learning from the mistakes of last year, and we're timing our run for the All-Ireland Championship and Sam Maguire at the right time.
That's funny, because we were just saying that here in the studio, that's definitely a theory that's out there. But, like, I mean, you look at Kevin McStay's interview on Sunday night and he looked hurt. Like, I mean, is there a lot of negative, kind of a negative atmosphere around Roscommon?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, when you're the manager of a team, and I think, you know, it was obviously a difficult week for Kevin, maybe, but with some of the comments that have been attributed to former players in the local media here the previous week and after the defeat to Mayo. And, you know, I suppose with the team maybe not getting results, the pressure is always going to be on the manager, and sometimes you know, managers take these things maybe personally, and rightly so as well at times when some of the critique is over the top. I think, to be honest, I'll look at it in Roscommon at the moment, it's no secret that we've got a very young side outside of Seanie McDermott. You're looking at Enda Smith and Niall McInerney has really been the senior players in the team, and both these guys are 22 and 23 respectively. So we're in a period of transition, and certainly the squad isn't as deep or as strong as it was this time last year.
No.
For one reason or another, and results reflect that, to be fair. I mean, when you peruse and go through the squad that Roscommon have at the moment, it's akin probably to a team that can compete at the lower levels of Division 2 or maybe the higher levels of Division 3, and that's just the reality of it. The players that have gone out have been replaced by players who are either playing junior football or intermediate football in Roscommon and are not playing with any of the senior clubs in Roscommon. So that's the reality. That's the newfound reality we're in. But I'd have to say I've been encouraged by some of the performances of these young lads, and in particular Sean Mullooly has been outstanding at fullback. Tiger Roark done quite well at midfield the other day for us against Kerry, against David Moran. So these guys are learning, but it you know, as you know yourself, inter-county football is an unforgivable place, and Division 1 is at the top of the tree, and when you're playing two or three of the best teams in the country, as we will now in a row, results won't be positive, and there's no anticipation that they can be. But what we would have been looking for from our team is competitiveness, and that is what we've got over the last number of weeks, aside from the Mayo game.
Yeah, I think against Kerry they're definitely competitive. You talked about the squad there, Shane, and I mean, some fellas retired, some fellas were dropped off the panel, some fellas dropped themselves off the panel, so you're down to the bare bones, and I'm just wondering why these fellas are dropping themselves off the panel.
Look, you know, there's a number of issues, there's a number of reasons. I'm sure that, you know, some of the players that are off the panel are offered for reasons that, you know, there's either work or retirement. And as you alluded to, there's guys that who are maybe tired, not retired, but tired of the whole show of intercounty football and like,
there's a theory I've heard that some of these fellas are big Fergie O'Donnell fellas, and they were a little bit annoyed with the way he left the joint management and he's gone now with two selectors.
I suppose it's like anything, Colin, we have to deal really not in the theory or not in the rumour, but in the fact. And I don't buy into any of those. I would have to say though that there are players who aren't in the progress common panel at the moment, who for one reason or the other, I believe they should be. And that's maybe is it the reason for that because of Fergal's I suppose off from the management job on that, or the way it happened, I don't know. What I do know is this, that the fallout from the Kevin and Fergal management duo last year has created a divide that has probably run deep with some players, and some players obviously were loyal to Fergal, and I think that's acceptable in some cases, that will happen. Could the breakup have been any cleaner? I don't think it could have been, to be fair. Kevin did give Fergal the opportunity to go and go for the job. He declined to go for the job. The facts are that Kevin did state that it was a new slate. And maybe this is one of the reasons why there is some maybe antagonism in the country, that there is a little bit of a follow-on from last year's, is that maybe the new slate wasn't totally wiped clean, and that everybody hasn't been given a fair chance at a crack at the whip. And that's a criticism of the management, without a doubt. It's one that Kevin will have to stand over, those decisions not to totally wipe the slate clean, bring everybody in. And I'm a believer that, you know, I think when we have been players ourselves, I'm involved in management now. The one thing I would always say is that, to a manager, let players play themselves off the team, don't leave them off, and don't create a stick to for your own back. And I think this is a mistake that maybe he's made, but he's made a particular decision in terms of a number of players, and that's the route map he's on. It's regretful that some of these aren't playing for us common, but that's life, and he's made that decision as the manager. That's his choice, and I think that's one of the reasons maybe why supporters in particular are asking so many questions.
Yeah,
you know, if you lose by a point to Donegal, what if we had X, Y and Z playing? What if we had X, Y and Z against Kerry? Would we be 2, 4, 6 points better off? So these are the sort of questions that are caused by having that type of vacuum and no clarity about the reasons why the players aren't there. As there are some mitigating factors, Neil Collins is travelling and working. Myle Carty retired and probably has injuries as well that he couldn't, that made inter-county football impossible for him. The three dailies are probably a major case in point. And there are others.
Let's talk about the three dailies, because two of the dailies dropped off. All three dailies were on the team last year in the league, right? And two of them dropped off the panel. One notified Kevin early in the league that he was going to America during the summer, and one waited until very late to inform him. So I can see why Kevin would have the hump with the fella who waited very late to inform him. But Kevin didn't ask either of those two dailies in onto the squad this year, and now their brother Niall got taken off at half time and he's gone as well. So, you know, instead of, like you're saying, wipe the slate clean and leave the dailies back in and start a new year fresh, Kevin has, you know, pretty much left them off, left lads like Donny Shine, David Keane and Sean Purcell, James McDermott off. And then you have Neil Collins and Cottle Craig not committing, and suddenly Kevin looks around and he's got, you know, only half a squad, and some of it's partly his own fault.
Yeah, and again, as I said, he's got to wear that cross now. He's made those decisions, rightly or wrongly. But he's made them, it's his prerogative, it's his choice, he's the manager. I do think that it was a mistake, same way as I felt it was a mistake for him to go into management. But when he did say he was wiping the slate clean, again, this is why supporters are alluding to it. You know, if you're going to wipe the slate clean, let's start afresh, start anew with the players that were there last year and give them the chance. He has chosen not to kind of maybe do that in totality. He's chosen to bring younger players and build a younger squad. But maybe that doesn't wash either. These guys are all young as well, and there's a number of others around the county who are young guys that aren't involved, possibly should be, and maybe will be in the future. In when the league is over, we might see the like Hubert Darcy and Tom Butler and a few players like that that are certainly capable of adding something to the squad at intercounty level. But again, these guys are only 19 and 20 years of age. They're at the start of their intercounty careers, and they're not experienced. And that's the route he's decided to go down. That's his prerogative, and that's probably why there are so many question marks around the squad, maybe in terms of a national sense, and maybe why there's a lot of frustration within the supporters that these players are not there. And
right.
It doesn't lend it, you know, to I think moving forward we've got to look at this maybe in a more harmonious way and try and support the players that are there now and give them the best we possibly can. And I'm sure with Kevin's tutelage and with Lean's coaching, they look to be doing fine, but regretfully it's a steep learning curve at Division 1, and the players just at the moment, they're not at that level, and it's going to take a lot of patience over the next couple of years for this team to develop into something that can compete. I think even at Division 2 level will be an achievement.
Right, okay. Talk to us a little bit about where the split came between Kevin and Fergal, because my information tells me that it all started after Kerry hammered Roscommon in the league final, and Fergal wanted to go with a more defensive approach and Kevin was kind of against that. And is that where it all started?
But it looks like there's rumour and innuendo, and I think I like to deal in the facts, and I like to deal with maybe as best possible without being critical of either manager or either man. And the bottom line is that, as I said to you earlier on, the biggest mistake that anybody can make is dual management.
Yeah.
I don't think Kevin had to in the initial stage. I don't think he had to bring in anybody else with him. He could have stayed on his own 2 feet and taking the job on its own. The genesis for the split probably came then, even though both men wouldn't have seen it. But those of us who would be close to football and understand maybe the nuances of how both would look at the game, would realise that there was only one way it was possibly going to end. And they will be poor assets in terms of their tactical awareness, of, not so much tactical awareness, but how they would deploy their players to play the game. O'Donnell would certainly be a very defensive-minded individual who would look at the game as being very, you know, you either can or if you can't compete, then you've got to limit your exposure to getting heavy defeat. And because this defensive game, Aaron would be far more pragmatic. He would also be far more in tune with playing the game in a more expansive way. Playing at a high skill level, kick passing will be at the centre of and core of his coaching, as it would with Lee. And you know, encouraging players to make mistakes and encouraging players to develop. Not to say that Fergal wouldn't either, but they would have completely different polar opposite views on how the game should be played.
Right. So there's never. It was never going to end well then, because you know, if Fergal leaves, two of the selectors leave, Kevin stays, Liam stays. So it was pretty obvious that there was going to be a majority from in favour of Fergal, you know, from last year. If the management was split on how to play, if three of them have gone, it's fairly clear to me that it was a 3-on-2, and Fergal was more getting his way maybe than Kevin.
That's quite possible. And looking at the way we played, you know, subsequently against Galway in the drawing game and tried to play against them in Castlebar, there was a complete disconnect again. The game's clear was a non-entry anyhow. As you know, teams that go through and get bad beatings in provincial finals, it's very difficult for them to turn around 6 days later and be competitive after a demoralising defeat. So the Clare game was always going to be a disaster, and it turned out to be that. And after that, then I suppose, I know that the both men met. I know that there was a discussion about how the best way forward was going to be, and that could only be separately. And the offer, I know, was made to Fergal to put his name forward in front of the county board for ratification along with Kevin. He chose not to do so, and you know, Kevin has the job. Nigel Deline put his name in the hat but subsequently took it out, and Kevin had the job on his own, and he has that job on his own now, and it's up to himself to make the decisions that he sees fit in the best interest of Roscommon football. Does every supporter in the county believe that the decisions he's made are the right ones? I would say not. I would say there's a lack of harmony between the supporters, the county board, and the management and the players. And the job now is to kind of rectify that and look forward instead of looking back, and see can we build something with this new young squad, and possibly in the future get some of these players that are capable of playing at this level back into playing county football.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you just to finish up, is what do you see the future for Kevin? Like, I mean, has this gone too far for him? Does he need to win a Connacht Championship to keep his job?
I wouldn't speculate on that. To be honest about it, I think I do actually laugh when I see GA contracts and he's agreed a 2.5 and 3 year term or a 4 year term or a 5 year term, because let me tell you one thing, these terms mean nothing and the contracts mean they don't mean the paper they're written on. It's a results based game. I think you can certainly do things to help as a manager, to help build harmony and to build trust and to build a kind of a squad that is believable, that we can compete at a certain level. We're not as good as we think we are, and we were never as good as it looked last spring either. But we have players who are at the stage of their careers that I believe it's hugely important for them to be involved in county squads, because it has a kind of an umbrella effect, and it has the effect of bringing, if you've got 3 or 4 young guys or 5 or 6 young guys who are playing together, or they're in college and they're in the same cars travelling down and they're having a bit of crack and they're enjoying maybe the banter at this stage of their careers, and they like the competitive element of it. Well, you can build something along, you can build a kind of harmonious type of a family there with you in terms of the players that you have. If you have 2 or 3 guys that are not there and they're friends of the 2 or 3 fellas that are inside in the panel, it's very, very difficult to do that with young players, and particularly when you don't have, and we don't have, an experienced core of guys at 28, 29, 30, 31 who can bring the youthful players up to the next level. And that's the conundrum that's there at the moment. There's a big, big chasm between being a good, experienced, wintered inter-county footballer, Division 1 or 2 level, at 27, 28, 29, than been 21, 22, 23, which we have at the moment, which is possibly somewhere like an under 23 side, really. And it's very, you know, we're not Dublin. We can't afford to be without all these players. And I think, you know, efforts over the coming months to maybe, you know, bring people back into the fold could be made, and maybe should be made, in the best interests of Kevin's managementship. A managership of the Roscommon Senior Football Team, and in the best interests of the county as a whole.
Yeah, okay, well listen, it'd be different, it'd be interesting to see how it all pans out and if that happens. Listen, Shane, thanks very much for taking the call.
Pleasure all mine, Woolly, thanks very much.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
Yeah, lads, the big one at the weekend is Tyrone and Cavan, and these teams have a little bit of history after playing last year in the Ulster semi-final twice. We all thought it was going to be a dour affair, and it turned out to be an absolute, it turned out to be score fest. Well, especially the replay, you know, maybe defensive, but not as defensive as maybe they should be. You know, Cavan are known as a defensive team, but Tyrone ran up 5-18 on them in the replay.
Yeah, Peter Hart was playing that day.
After that, Peter Hart was the best player. I think that's when it all started. I think that's when the podcast last year started. Right, okay. Peter Hart, this is when I figured this fella out. Everyone's the best player.
When you perform well for Portlaoise intermediate, you'll become the best player.
I will be the greatest intermediate player at that level in the whole country.
I'll tell you what, I came back from Euro 2016, was over watching Ireland, not the North. I was watching Ireland, and came back and I got sent straight to Clunas to cover Tyrone and Cavan, and it was beautiful to be back amongst the real people, you know. And
the Gaels applauding how Tyrone played.
Yeah, dude, well, I can appreciate that. Good Imagine football that. And then like Peter Hart was,
he loves Tyrone. Right? He'll get into an argument defending.
Are you from Ballandary, are you?
I'm not getting into that. Yeah, he was strutting around with number 7. He's back, he scored 2-4. I think he got 2-2 from play. And Jesus, the man was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Peter Hart's a fantastic player, you know. When you look at the point he scored last year in the Ulster final, a remarkable score, one of the scores of the season. But you know, he is the type of halfback, and another player that we spoke quite a bit about this year so far. He's the type of halfback that you expect to get 3-4 scores a game, you know, because of his ability to ghost in behind the fences, and he's clinical when he gets an opportunity in front of goals.
I know Tyrone, obviously, I think this will be a one-sided match, actually. In Healy Park, and like we talked about Roscommon being out of their depth at this level, but Cavan are out of their depth, and if they had their full team, potentially they could be competitive. But like, I mean, they're missing Givney, he's gone, Fergal Flanagan, one of their best wing back, then Eugene Keating, he's gone off the panel again. He was coming and going, and if he got back to the form, they need everybody that they have, you know. And when they lose Givney, they're playing trying Garrod McKiernan at full forward, so they're ended up in midfield with Killian Clark and Mossy Corr.
And still,
Mossy Corr's a small fella. He's not a dominating midfield, they're completely snookered there. And the other option then is Rory Dunn, who's a full back. So in the first league game against Dublin, they played Rory Dunn and Killian Clark, two full backs in midfield.
Killian,
so they're
Clark
snookered
had,
there.
I've been cornerback for quite a while, but you know, there's still an over-reliance there on Shawnee Johnson for scores, and Tyrone are the masters of snuffing out a player of that ability, you know, and you know, curtailing his, the threat of Shawnee Johnson, and I'm sure this weekend that's going to be the case once again.
Yeah, no, and like, I mean, Shawnee played well against Dublin when he got a little bit of space, and we know he's a great finisher and a nippy player. But geez, he doesn't do too well against Tyrone. Like, I mean, I know not many corner forwards do. If you could, like, what corner forward has ever performed well? Oh, well, there you go.
Steve McDonald literally has his hand up in the studio.
Go ahead, Stevie, you can talk about it. Conor Gormley made a very good block one time.
That was a while ago.
That wasn't a big occasion, was it?
That was against a better Tyrone team.
See, you should have gone with your left that one, actually. You went to kind of pump that in. Now, I don't want to kind of start being critical about Stevie McDonald.
There's absolutely no nightmares.
Is that how I went on, Stevie?
If I had seen Conor Gormley, I would have checked inside him. But you know what? I would applaud Conor Gormley for that there, because I think it's moments like that in games that, you know, teams deserve to win in All Ireland if a player is prepared to put his body on the line like that there. And absolutely, it was a fantastic block. I certainly don't have any nightmares. You move on from you know, chances that you missed, especially as a forward. You can miss chances and you can take a lot of chances, but at the end of the day, you go out and try to replicate it or rectify it the next day.
Was he going in? Did you hit it? Did you hit it well?
Listen, it might have blazed wide. It might have blazed over the bar. I don't know. Conor Gormley didn't really give me a chance to get that close to it, but really and truly, he came out of nowhere. If I had seen him in the corner of my eye, I would have expected or believed that I would have tried to cut inside him, and he would have probably had no option but to pull me down. But you have to hand it to Conor. You know, he put his body on the line in a defining moment of an All-Ireland final, and it got them across the line.
Yeah, it did. It was an iconic thing. I suppose you're better off be blocked down than a go wide anyway, if that's any consolation.
Yeah, well,
it was going into the bottom corner, wasn't it? Let's be honest here.
It was top corner.
But Les, this is the thing about Cavan, and we're talking about Givney. He's in London working, and Fergal Flanagan, Eugene Keating, these fellas, and it's always these counties. And they don't have their best players available to them. Like, I know Conor Minor didn't play the last day. He's back from injury. Keane Mackey is struggling enough from injury. And Cavan looked like, if they had their full team, they'd be really strong. But what is it about these counties? And it must be just the chance of not being able to win anything. Because you don't hear stories of Tyrone fellas not committing. You don't hear stories of Dublin, we'd love to have him there. You don't hear Mayo. You don't hear Kerry. It's always these counties like Laois and like bloody Cavan and Tipperary and all these. And loads of lads don't want to commit to the panel, and it's
probably making the breakthrough that sets the counties apart. And you know what, when I can only use it from our own experience, when we made the breakthrough in 1999, no players were dropping off the panel. When you made the breakthrough in 2003, had you any fallouts or drop offs?
Well,
in
me once or twice, but that was normal enough.
But you know, we can totally understand why you dropped off the panel. But any other players, you know, they were always pushing hard to get into the setup. And maybe if Cavan were to go and replicate what they'd done at under 21 level, these players would be probably a lot hungrier and have more desire to perform and play for their county at senior level.
Yeah, they almost made that break. They got to a quarter final against Kerry. It must be 4 years ago now, and were beaten, but they played well enough in the second half. Had a poor first half, but you think then, right, Cavan are at that pitch, let's build on it. They haven't built on it, and for different reasons, because they haven't had the injuries and bad luck, a bit like Down in 2010, just things conspiring against them.
I think you know, a step in the right direction for Cavan has to be an Ulster championship. You know, and reaching the quarterfinals without having success at Ulster level, I don't think is an achievement in itself for Cavan. I think they really have to go and win silverware at championship level, and it's 1987 since the last done it. You know, so it's too long away, too far away.
The problem with their under 21 teams as well is that they won four in a row, didn't they? And they never won an All Ireland. Like, and they took a beating or two in an All Ireland finals. Like, so these were good teams, but they weren't great teams. I don't want to sound like Gabe and Duffy. You know, they never won that under 21 to go, this is a special team. Yeah. It was always like the four Ulsters in a row and no All Ireland. Like, I'd be more disappointed that there's no All Ireland.
This team is a bunch of cons. Is that what you're about to say?
They're frauds.
No, but like it's you know, but the teams you mentioned there that never have dropouts are teams that are competing, and that's probably part of the apathy. Like. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned on Monday's show, Jesus, what a show.
What a show that was.
But like I mentioned, that Derry are missing 12 players from the team that beat Down 2 years ago in the championship to now. Like, and yes, there are a couple of injuries and the two Stock Neil boys aren't there. But, you know, really, it's a massive undertaking to do nothing, really. Like, you get
the impression there's excuses coming out for Derry here.
But like, we're almost falling into championship structures thing, and, you know, not fair. And every county has these fellas going, hang on a second, that's a bit much now for me this year. You know, I'm not going to win anything, and I'm going to do something myself. And they're nationwide.
Yeah.
They're nationwide.
And we have to understand, too, that there is life outside of football, you know, and people have to earn a living, and, you know, people have to think of their career choices and their prospects, you know, further down the line. And certainly, you know, football is a very, very much a short lifespan. And once that's over, you know, most of the players, you know, move on into the moonlight, and we don't see or hear of them anymore. And, you know, some players are probably thinking more towards their career than what they are in terms of interested towards playing for their county.
Yeah, it's interesting what they're doing with Gerard McKiernan, because he's like he's their best player, he's their best midfielder, and they're playing him at full forward. He moved out from full forward into midfield in the second half against Donegal and played well. So I'd say that experiment is over, and not because he won't work in there, but look what they're losing in midfield, and they don't have Givney. So if they had Givney, you know, you have McKiernan at centre forward, and it just looked like a bigger Michael Argue there at full forward, and suddenly Cavan look like they're a big, strong team, and they have a bit about them. Whereas now it's a bit like meh. What? You know, they just don't look like they're anywhere near Division One standard with what, you know, the cards they have at the moment.
Yeah, and like that's obviously shows you the dire straits around the moment, where it's like, right, let's just put McKiernan up there and see what if we can get anything, any change out of him. But that's the worry now coming into this weekend against Tyrone, because I think it's probably the best defence in Ireland against the weakest attack in Division 1 at the moment, and it's just a total mismatch.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say that they might be, they're definitely the weakest attack in Division 1 if Roscommon have if Diarmaid Murta fit. You'd imagine they are. So we're giving Cavan no chance here against Tyrone before we move on to Tyrone for a second.
I wouldn't give them much of a chance now, especially given the fact that the game is in Noma.
Matty Donnelly, lads, because I wasn't on top of this, I was changing dirty nappies, but Matty Donnelly lined out at full forward against Monaghan. He didn't, surely that's, I'll tell you now, Mickey Hart, that's an experiment that just give abandon that now, because that's not going to
Mickey
last.
Mickey Hart could be playing a cute man here now, and just, you know, making teams believe that Matty Donnelly is Tyrone's main player, he's their best player at the minute, and making teams believe that he's going to move him around the pitch and throw teams off guard. But there's no doubt Matty Donnelly's going to be wearing number 6 come championship time.
Yeah,
you think he'll be number 6?
Or number 6?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
And you see, like, Conor Myler's playing wing forward. Like, after seeing Conor Myler for St Mary's in the Sigerson, I'd love to see him wing back. I mean, he's an all action, all in the play wing back.
I think what we might see is Peter Hart pushed up in that half forward line, Tiernan McCann, Conor Myler, either side of Matty Donnelly.
It's a serious fight,
team of wing backs.
It's a brilliant half back. It's a brilliant defence, so it is. But Peter Hart moving forward gives them something serious potency in their attack as well.
Yeah, to Joe McMahon was back there, or was that Justin McMahon? Jay McMahon, probably
Justin.
Yeah, he's back centre back. But the one thing about Tyrone and their system is Mayo exposed their system with Justin McMahon at centre half back, that he drops off, and they played Alan Dillon on him, who wasn't a working half forward, and just left him on the half forward line, and Justin McMahon didn't know what to do. You know, like, if you do enough homework on Tyrone, like, their system is very, very obvious. You know, you've got your Colm Kavanagh, you've got your Justin McMahon, who are dropping. Immediately, if they're dropping, who are their free men? Put attacking players on them that are not going to just stay out around the middle third and do nothing, but stay around the 45 and actually be free when they drop. Or else, if they're free around the 45, then the lads can't drop off them. You know what I mean? So I don't think enough teams kind of put it up to Tyrone, because Tyrone are very, very predictable in their system.
Their system's obvious, but it's a system of percentages, though, where more often than not they'll have enough percentages to win games. And like even the Mayo game you've referenced, I think they should have won that match, you know, when it all came down to it. Like, well, maybe not, they didn't take the chances, so you can't really say they should have won it, but, you know, they still had enough in that game to go on and win it. And I think they'll continue to play it. Like, Dublin's system is very obvious, but, you know, their system is based on having better players than all to all their teams, and Tyrone are trying to get the best out of their players. And then the way Stevie's setting that team up, I mean, that means you'll have Hart and Sludden running around free.
Exactly.
You come in on the defence, and then you just overrun anybody. Yeah. It doesn't matter if your system's obvious, you'll have enough.
For any team to have success against Tyrone, you know, they have to have clinical shooters from distance. You know, you would expect that a team that's going to beat Tyrone will score 75%+ of their scores from 40 yards and out, because of how tight their defence is.
Yeah.
The pace in that, I know it, like we've said this and it's very obvious, but the pace in that Tyrone team, when you're looking at McCarron, who will attack from cornerback, and he's speedy, Tiernan McCann, then you have Myler, you have Peter Hart, you have Matty Donnelly, you have Sludden, who's a speedster as well, and they're all half forwards, half backs, and they're the lads breaking a pace. But like I said it on an earlier show, they need to be a little bit braver against the Dublins and send more of them off when they break the ball. Yeah, and
but as we spoke about a few weeks ago, they've got a plan B now if used right. And it was interesting, after we spoke about it, he was actually using that way, Sean Kavanagh, a target man in full forward as well. You
and
know,
did they give him a few balls in?
I think the following game he was brought on and he was made as an impact sub, and it was the Dublin game, I think it was actually, and he got a couple of scores from coming on deep into the second half and having the freedom to play.
Yeah,
football.
No, he got a few scores against Monaghan. I don't think he got anything against Dublin.
He got three against Monaghan.
Well,
I know he was playing in that way after we spoke about it. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's a great plan B for Tyrone as well, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's going to be an interesting one. The other one is Tipperary and Longford. This is the one in Division 3. Tipperary, obviously, if they win, they'll go to 6 points. Longford are another one. They're down joint bottom with Laois, which doesn't look great on paper. I've been ignoring Laois fairly well so far this year. And Jesus Christ, that's just shocking, the level that Laois are producing.
Given the fact that I know I predicted them to get promoted, you were saying the same.
Laois have been a solid Division 2 team for so long. And, outside their first 15, they're not great, and they've had so many injuries that for example, Ross Common. I think I'm going to give Creedon a championship before I'm going to start complaining about them, because I know they're riddled with injuries, and the results don't look good on paper. But I still, from what I hear, it's a good setup, and I do think maybe they could turn the corner. If they don't, it's been an horrific year. They at least could go down to Division 4, which would be a disaster, but we saw Westmeath able to turn it around. But Longford have beaten Offaly so far. They beat Offaly by 5 points. They only lost to Armagh by 2 at home, 3-9 to 3-11. That looked like a great game. And they were robbed against Loud away, 11-10. They had a strong wind and they were on the way back and the referee blew it up early. So, you know, Longford are down on 2 with Laois. But this is by no means a gimme for Tipperary in this division.
No, if Longford, like any team, if they get ahead of steam, you know, they have the ability to score. And they've got Brian Kavanagh, a proven scorer in their team. And once you have a player, a marquee forward like that there, you know, you always have a chance. But against Armagh, they did rally late to come back and could have possibly won the game. So, you know, but they still scored 3-9. And 3-9 is going to win most games. So, you know, they are putting up big scores. And as I say, if you've got an attacking mindset and a drive to push forward, you are going to test teams, especially in Division 3. So, you know, that particular game, you know, I do expect Longford will cause the Tipperary team some problems.
Yeah, okay, right, lads, we'll leave it there. Next up is going to be the worst accumulator slot in the history of accumulator slots.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it 3 times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Yeah, lads, accumulators. They're doubles. They're not accumulators. They're not really classified under accumulator. So I'm going, despite after talking Longford up there, Tipperary and Tyrone. And I imagine we're going to have a full house of Tipperary and Tyrone.
I'll just go for Longford and Tyrone then, just for the crack.
Go for what you want.
I've had a lot of bad experiences with Longford. I think the way things are going in Tipperary, they're just culturally more than anything, you know, just having that game called off at the weekend and the hurling one going ahead the next day, like things like that would start to annoy players, I think. And was that explained
that the hurlers would have been playing the following week anyways, and the footballers had a spare weekend off, so there was a logic maybe it was League Sunday or something I was watching or was hearing that on.
Yeah.
That there was actually, or maybe it was the podcast, was it? Did somebody, the Keane.
There's so much in that podcast.
Keane might have said it. I can't remember anyways, but there was a logic that they'd say, right, there's two games to be played this weekend. Yeah. Hurlers are playing this weekend and the following weekend. Footballers have a free weekend. You know, let's move on. Tipperary love hurling, but like maybe there was a little bit more logic in that.
But I think it's a nice, I know this is contradictory because I'm back in Tyrone, but it's been a good year for away teams in the league, and there seems to be that sort of bond when you go travelling to another place and you get the night over and stuff. Like I think you can put on a better performance away from home, and Jesus, yeah, every dairyman will tell you that Longford are a better team than anyone else would think.
Yeah.
So, yep, I'm going to go for Longford and Tyrone.
Okay, and you're going Tipperary, Tyrone, because we don't want to spend any more time on this, because I want to talk about beach balls.
Quickly, I'm going to go Tipperary -2 and Tyrone -4.
Oh, I was wondering what you were rooting on your phone for there, buddy.
Yeah, it's almost 3-1.
All right, okay, very good. There's a bit of homework being done. I put no effort into this.
Yeah,
human
just nonsense there for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, geez, Colin's really trying to wind us out to the end of the show here. Lads, beach balls, because I want to, this has just been, I've been obsessed with this going round and round in my mind. And these
you're going to get a phone call. In actual fact, they weren't beach balls.
Because beach balls just sound like, I'm picturing a beach ball just been a volleyball being tapped over a net and they're actually playing with them. But they're obviously like medicine balls, maybe, then they're trying to warm up their upper bodies. Please just explain the logic behind these to me, because in my head they're weighted
beach balls. That's the best way I can describe them.
Well, I describe them as bigger medicine balls, so we can get some sort of hybrid.
They certainly weren't as heavy as medicine balls. I don't believe that they were, and the material of them seemed to be like beach balls. So
the ones that Longford used against Derry in one of them seasons they beat Derry, it was John Brennan's last game, but they had handles on either side of them. I don't know if that was the same.
They were driving them, were they?
But they were sort of lifting them up into the air and holding them by the two handles and slamming them into the floor.
Right.
And I remember thinking, what a bunch of...
But you can
games.
See what they're trying to do there. It's obviously stupid. Like, I mean, it's nothing that a press-up might not do or a few bloody burpees. You're only trying to get warmed up. Like, there's too much thought put into warm-ups. Warm-ups, like, I remember when Liam Cairns took us over, he let us kind of control the warm-up because, say, what, you know, we tried 5 different ones. And then we might lose after one and we're blaming the warm-up for the loss. Like, and I mean,
every single time.
A warm-up, even in the summer, you don't need that much of a warm-up. No. You just need to get your heart rate up. You need to get limbered up and stretch. And get the ball in your hands.
And I actually believe every player should be taking responsibility for their own stretching anyway, and doing that in the dressing room or some free space that they have.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I think you see some managers and they are maybe elaborate, and when you're starting to bring out props like that, silly.
Yeah, and the props, you know, you're taking them up from Offaly, you're carrying them around the place, but they use them for about a minute.
Right.
You know, no longer. What was the actual benefit? I'd love to know myself, what was the benefit of using these balls? And maybe there is a scientific reason behind it, but I'd love to know what it was.
I'll get the Longford manager maybe on the
Offaly.
Phone.
Offaly.
It was the Offaly. Yeah,
I'm talking about Longford years ago now. So
Longford. But I remember when Barry Solon, he's with Mayo now, when he took over Leash, it was the first time we started using those elastic bands. You know, the elastic bands that keep your kind of posture straight.
And once you put it around both your ankles?
Yeah, around both your ankles, and you walk forward, or you shuttle to the side, and you feel like an awful gimp doing it. But I could see the logic behind this, you know, keep your centre of balance and, you know, improve the strength in your legs.
Bands are also strengthening your hamstrings as well.
Hamstrings, but you see every team using those bands now. It's a lot the way these fads kind of come, and I can't remember what team I was seeing, but they were heading down a corridor with these bands tied around it. But they're okay in a dressing room and stuff, when the manager starts bringing them out into the field, you know, it's a little bit ego stuff then again. And like these strength and conditioning fellas, like they're advertising their careers as well, so maybe they're trying to...
Well, actually, I've worked quite a lot with Mike McGurn, and he, you know, he's a well known strength and conditioning guy.
Yeah, he's with Leash.
Yeah, but one of the things that he highlights, he always says focus on your ball skills. You know, he's worked with us with Armagh, he's worked with us with my team last year with Clevey, and he doesn't drive home the emphasis on weightlifting and lifting big heavy weights. He drives home the fact that Gaelic players should be focusing more on the ball skills and the basic skills of the game and not as heavy lifting.
Yeah, on that then though, because like, I mean, you brought weights into the game. Like, you didn't bring them into the game, but you brought them to a level that we hadn't seen before, because I remember doing weights in 1997, 1998 with Leach, but we'd do them for a month before before Christmas, and then they're forgotten about. So it was a complete waste of time, you know, and it wasn't that scientific. Yeah. But when you came in 2003, your physiques had completely transformed, as in, Jesus, they're doing something that nobody else is doing. You know what I mean? So, like, you say concentrate on the ball, but that obviously had a huge, huge impact on you. So maybe a psychological thing as much as the actual physical thing.
Believe
benefits.
It or not, and any Armagh player will tell you this, I stayed away from the gym for most of my career. It was only in around 2008, when I progressed in my career, I got older, that I actually realised the importance of actually doing the strength work. And, you know, the earlier part stage of my career, when I wasn't in the gym, I was down in front of goals, kicking balls over the bar.
Right.
And you know, that to me made me a better player by sticking to the basic skills of the game. And Mike McGurn, if you ever get him on the phone or whatever, he'll tell you straight out that he thinks that too many teams in Gaelic football emphasise, you know, the powerlifting and weightlifting and over, to put too much of an emphasis on that over skills.
Right, okay. And go on.
I was going to ask you, were you part of the Armagh teams that used to walk out onto the pitch, come down the tunnel, taking their time, chest out? Apparently it was some psychological.
No, I'm gonna explain that to you. That happened against Derry.
It did happen. You got hammered.
Yeah, we got hammered, and I was the captain that day, and it was one of my biggest regrets. It was actually the thought was put to us that week by our sports psychologist, and I.
So explain exactly what the thought was.
That we were in control of basically our destiny, of the match, and if we walked out more in a controlled manner, that we were still, you know, our mind was focused fully on the match and the job in hand. Derry absolutely hammered us, and it was one regret that I do have as captain of the Armagh team, that, you know, we actually done that, but something that we learned from, and I would, you know, say to any team, don't ever do it again, because I think, you know, driving out onto the pitch full of energy and full of beans basically is the way forward, and the way to get yourself psyched up and pumped for the intensity of a championship match. But that only happened once, by the way, from an Armagh point of view, and it was against Derry. Backfired tremendously on us, and I wouldn't encourage it to happen again. But I will take some of the blame, because I was the team captain, and I accepted that, you know, maybe it was something different and something to try out.
Yeah, so when that was suggested to you, like, was there fellas going, yeah, I'm not sure?
No, nobody came in advance of it. We put it to the players, and every player seemed to think, okay. We had gone on a run of games and started to perform well as a team, and maybe it distracted us by doing that, you know, and we believed in what we were doing. But, you know, it certainly, it did backfire. I think, looking back at that Derry game, you know, it was one of those games where Owen Bradley was absolutely on fire. Pulverised us in the first half in particular, but if we had have run out onto the pitch as normal, I think we might have been more fired up for the start of that game, because Derry hit us with a few sucker punches early in that game, and you know, it certainly knocked us back.
Yeah, okay, that's great stuff. We didn't expect to go there in the accumulator section. I hope everyone didn't tune out actually for the worst accumulator section of all time.
I think mine isn't bad now.
Yeah, yours is decent. Okay, you kind of you've saved that section in more ways than one. That's all we have time for this week. We might be back on Monday, depending on how the weekend goes, if anything interesting happens.
Warm-ups, keep an eye on the warm-ups.
Yeah, and beach balls. We might try and get the Offaly trainer on the line. Right, good luck.
Yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.